Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hi everyone, welcome to a new episode of Beyond the Romance Drama Recaps. And this is going to be episode 3. I've had a lot of fun doing the first 2 episodes, and this one is a bit late. I intended to do it a week before, but I wasn't feeling well. But I do have a lot to get caught up on. Some of the shows that I was watching have wrapped up, such as Vincenzo, Papa Daddy, and one of the ones that I was watching, but I didn't mention it in the previous recaps, was Taxi Driver. And that was because I actually started it after, and then I binge watched most of the episodes that I had missed within the space of like a couple weeks, and then it wrapped up this past week gone. So I'll discuss that, and then also I'll discuss the shows that I'm currently watching. I'm gonna try to keep my list short, or I should say my recording time short, because I did go a little bit longer than I intended for episode 2. And the first show I'm going to speak about today is Vincenzo. I love this drama. It may not have been everyone's cup of tea, but it is perfectly my cup of tea. It's a perfect mix of action, drama, comedy, heart, just a titch of romance. And I actually kind of do like that the romance was, as I said, just a titch, because it didn't overshadow the plot, and it was basically the perfect underscoring for everything that was going on. So we know this drama starring Song Joong-ki, Jeon Yoo-bin, Tae Seon, Jo Han-chul, and a whole host of other people was fantastic casting, like from the main to the supporting characters. Even the guest appearances were really good. For me, the standout for this show is Kwak Dong-yeon, who played Jang Han-sook. He was really good. He broke my heart. So before I go any further, this of course is a spoiler-filled recap. I'm going to be discussing the plot elements, things that happened, things that I wished happened, and as I said, Kwak Dong Yeon and Tae Seon to me were the standouts for this, because they went toe-to-toe, I think, with Song Joong-ki. They did a phenomenal job. Everyone was perfect, but I think Tae Seon showed like what a great character actor, I would say, because his character of Jang Joon-woo, he's a psychopath, a relentless killer, a soulless killer. He's a terrible businessman, obviously, as well, because he made decisions without feeling, and it was all about building his Babel empire. But then it's like, if you know your Bible stories, the Tower of Babel fell eventually, and as well, that's what happened with his Babel Tower. And this man made terrible business decisions because he wasn't really thinking of how to run a company. He was just thinking about obtaining more power. Like, when you're running a company, you have to think about the administrative side of it too, people, which is something I find never really gets explored in Korean, or I should say Asian dramas in general. But I really love this drama. The costumes, to the costume designer and everyone who worked in the wardrobe department, and hair and makeup too, but the clothing, yes, amazing. I loved all of the suits. Song Joong-ki, this man's body is made for 3-piece suits. Yes, the waistcoats. Yes, Tae Seon in those suits. Yes, Kwak Dong-yeon. I could go on and on. But yeah, everyone was like looking to perfection. As like I mentioned in the previous review, in the previous recap, how there was a scene where the members of the apartment, like everyone dressed up, you know, they're mafioso, they're like Vincenzo's crew, and they all had on black suits, and everyone looked amazing. It was kind of comical too, but it was still really funny, but it still looked really, really good. And I like how this show wrapped up in the fact that Vincenzo is a mafia. He is a killer. He's a killer with a heart too, and a moral and ethical compass. Which, you know, like these kind of characters are complex, and when they're really well written, they're like, they can be relatable, and you like them, and you're like, I shouldn't like a killer, but if they're written and performed and directed really well, you can relate to them. Kind of like if you look at John Wick. John Wick is an assassin, brutal assassin, but people were like, kill all of these evil people, because they killed your dog. And Vincenzo's kind of the same way. Like Junwoo, he wanted to get rid of all of these people and he wanted all this gold. And Vincenzo was like, I'm gonna get revenge for these for the lawyers that were killed, which was Han Chang-yong's dad. I'm gonna get revenge for all of these awful things that you've done. Like, you killed my mother, massive mistake. And he went scorched earth and you were like firmly on his side. And then the things that happened with Han Seo, you were like, when his retribution for against Junwoo happened, scorched earth. Salted it, threw the ashes in the ocean, threw it to the wind. Like, what happened at that scene? I don't think I've ever seen anything like that in a Korean drama that is not a thriller. So, like, I wouldn't call Vincenzo a thriller. I would call it an action dramedy. But, like, those scenes, like, where he torched, what's the name of the character? The lawyer. She's so evil. She's so, Chim Young-yi. He set her on fire. And then what he did to Junwoo, where he, like, did this, it's not cut, death by a thousand cuts, but it's like this slow incremental death where he set up this drill contraption that he said he learned from the Russian mob, where it's like bit by bit this drill would ease into his body, and it took hours for him to die. And then, like, I'm like, this is something I see in a horror or in a really dark thriller drama. So I wasn't really expecting that, and because it kind of took the tone even darker than what we had seen before in the shows, but I think it worked out really well. Like, they balanced it really well. It didn't feel misplaced. But it was retribution for Han Seo, but I kind of wish, like, I wanted Han Seo to live. It hurt my heart that he died, and it hurt my heart that my prediction, if you watch episode 2 in the recap, you'll see that I actually said that I kind of saw him, his final moment being dying in Vincenzo's arms. Lo and behold, that is exactly what happened. And I'm like, no, I did not want it. He deserved to, like, live and be happy. Like, but his final words were like, he did ask Vincenzo if he was proud of him, if he did good. And Vincenzo was like, you did well. I'm like, oh, my heart. Oh, you broke my heart again. Because he kind of broke my heart again with his character. If you've seen It's Okay to Not Be Okay, he played this character who was manic depressive, and I think it was also bipolarism, and or bipolar disorder, I should say. And that character, where's his award, people? Like, he should be getting awards for, like, best guest supporting actor. Like, he's so good, and I think he's grown really, really well as an actor over the years too. But I can't wait for him to get a lead. I want him to get a really good lead role too. But he was phenomenal, I think, in this show. And Kim Yo-jin, who played Choi Myung-yi, she was really good. Like, I hated her guts. She was right up there with me with Ju Dan-tae in the Penthouse series. So there's one and two. And apparently I'm filming this, literally before I started filming this, my friend told me season 3 has already begun airing. And I was like, what? Are they still filming? Apparently they're filming as they go along. But if you've seen Penthouse, Ju Dan-tae, I hate that man's guts. He needs to die. But yeah, I hated Choi Myung-yi too, because she's like one of those villains where she does these horrible, horrible things to people, and then, like, Vincenzo, like, barely gave her a paper cut, and she'd be like, oh, my heart, like, don't do these things. Don't do these things to me. Don't hurt me. I'm like, you were just like, you literally got a man killed and buried in front of your face and you didn't flinch, but now you, like, no, you gotta die. And she did. And then with regards to the romance, I think it ended the way it should, because, like, Vincenzo, he's not someone accustomed to being in, I would say, close relationships with people. But his relationship with Hong Chang-yong, I think, was left open-ended, and because he went back to Italy, he was living on an island. He lied, said that he was making it kind of like a place of refuge for assassins, or, you know, like, people in that life. To, like, who wanted to get out of life to, like, to live. And it's not exactly true, but like, he did come back, and he was only able to come back for a day because he was able to, like, fly under the radar and travel with a group from Italy to South Korea. And it seems that he has to be careful, because he's basically technically on a no-fly list because he is a criminal. But they had a really, that kiss was really well done. As I saw someone say, the only time a man grabs a woman's arm as she's walking away, and it's not like some chauvinistic whole, it was romantic and it was read well done. And I agree. Like, it was just like, oh, pull my heart again. Look at me, I'm getting super dramatic with this one. But yeah, I liked how their relationship culminated, and like, they left it open ended. Like, maybe one day he'll be able to come back, or she could go visit him in Italy. And I actually wondered if he took Ngazi, you know, the pigeon. I actually wonder if he took Ngazi with him to Italy. As I think about these things. But and then like the tenants of the building, like, we had a baby was born, and then they all grew closer together. They all became like more tight-knit as a family and as friends, and like they're still like defending each other, and they still consider themselves to be part of the Cassano family, which I think is really cool. If they do like a special on them, I would love that too. This is probably one of those shows we will never get a second season, which is fine too. I just like the way it was wrapped up, and I think I just really love this show. This is one of the shows I know I'll be able to rewatch over and over again. And it has a lot to do with, of course, the acting. Everyone did their jobs really well. The directing, I think, was really on point. Props to the VFX team, because I saw some behind the scenes footage, and the things, like, we know how much of these things are done with VFX, but then when you see how they integrate like the fake backgrounds, like the scenes in Italy, into these shots, and you're like, oh my god, all of this is fake, and like, it makes you really buy into the world. But then it's just like, when you find out afterwards how much of what you're seeing isn't real, like, I always got to give props to like the production crews, the VFX teams, the costume department, you know, like even craft services, the people who feed them, like, they deserve props, because without these people, these shows and these films and everything that we watch to entertain us would never be able to be made, and to the level that they're done. So always, like, as usual, props to the production crew and the VFX team. And let me see, what would I say? I do hope to see Johan Chul in a role like what he did, who played Han Sung Yuk, because this is the first time I've seen him play a more comedic and more physical comedy role than what I've seen in previous dramas. And I actually liked his dynamic with Taesyeon. So like, but the dynamic is different, but like, I think they played off of each other really well, and even with Kwak Dong Yeon. So I would love to see them in more projects together. I think that would be really cool. And Hong Cha Young, she's really good too. And I think where you see sometimes when it comes to actors and performers, where you really see what they're capable of is if you watch a different project that they're in, and they're playing a completely different character. And I watched and reviewed Night in Paradise, which is also on Netflix. And she plays the female lead character, and like, her character is like completely devoid of emotions, and she's very short in her speech and manner. She's very matter of fact. She doesn't take anyone's feelings into consideration. She just says what she has to say because of particular circumstances. And I watched Night in Paradise as I was watching Vincenzo, and it was really interesting to see like her play these two polar opposite characters. And I can't wait to see what else Yoon Bin is in, because I think she's really, really good, and she had really great chemistry with Song Joong-ki as well. And that's one of the things with casting that I think always needs to be paid more attention to, is the casting, because these characters wouldn't really work if the actors don't have the chemistry, if they don't bounce off each other well. And that's one of the things I think that Vincenzo has done, and it's one of my favorite shows of the year so far because of that. So then another show that I completed that I'm not gonna go full on into. I'm talking about Vincenzo a little bit longer than I expected. Is Papa Daddy. So this one is another Taiwanese male love drama, and I spoke about this in episode 2 as well. So this one we know with Papa Daddy is about Damien and Jerry, where they're a gay couple raising a 3-year-old son Kai, and the main crux of most of the season was about Jerry not telling his parents, that he's not only homosexual, but that he's married and has a child. And eventually he tells his parents, and it kind of happens by accident, because he was at the Pride Parade and his sister was there, and his mom saw a video of Jerry and Damien and Kai walking along the parade route with Jerry's sister, who is also who's a lesbian. Now she was with her girlfriend, but the focus is on Jerry, and like, who is this man and this child you're with? And then it comes out, and he eventually tells his parents the truth, and his father wasn't as what's the word I'm looking for? Wasn't as harsh about it as he expected. Like the mother was full on into theatrics. She was crying and she even didn't tell the dad, but then the dad found out. And then it was good because Demon was right, because Demon was like, you can't not tell your mom. He's like, I understand about being in the closet. I understand you're afraid of the stigma and everything. But then he's also like, it's making me as your husband feel a type of way that you don't want to acknowledge our relationship. And then there's the then everything is compounded. We have a son. And how are you're denying our son's birthright? Because like they said, Kai is Jerry's biological son. And he's like, you're denying the existence of your son. Like she knows that Kai exists, but she thinks that he's my son and he's not related to you. And Damien was right. Damien was like that's hurtful. And Jerry didn't realize and he apologized. But then the writers, I don't know what they were thinking. Like all of the development that we had from this for these two characters from the beginning of the show up to the literally, I would say the last 10 minutes of the final episode, they destroyed all of that. Me finally getting on board with Damien's side, because Damien kind of got on my nerves from the beginning. But lo and behold, Damien has a whole son. A whole 15-year-old teenage son, which Jerry never knew about. Now, Jerry knew that Damien is bisexual. He knew that he had a girlfriend and a long-term relationship when he lived in America. He did not know, however, that that woman had a son and that son belongs to Damien. And I'm like, writers, what are you doing? Like all of that development of Damien as a character, of their trust being like completely bonded and them having complete and total trust in each other, is completely wasted away by Damien keeping this extremely important and vital secret from his husband. And it made him into a humongous hypocrite because like you're berating and you're telling Jerry that he needs to be honest about his homosexuality and about his relationship with you and your son, and you're keeping another son away from him. And then it ha and the re and the way he finds it is that this child just turns up at the door because the mother's sending him, the mother's getting married, so she's sending the son to live with Jerry. And Jerry didn't, no, sorry, yeah, to live with Damien. And Damien never told Jerry that not only is this child coming, he didn't tell, as I said, didn't tell him that this child that's coming is his son. So the boy turns up and Damien and Jerry's like, oh, who's this? He's like, oh, my son. Excuse me? What are you thinking? And this is something that bothers me a lot with these male love dramas. If you watch the history series, it has a, there's this thing where people are either always cheating on each other, keeping extremely massive lies for no reason from partners. And like if you watched We Best Love, so much time was wasted on a subplot of one of the guys thinking that his partner had a son. Like you know for sure this guy is gay. Like his mother knows he's gay. His mother knows that he's in a relationship with you, but you think he's having like he had a love child with this girl that he went. Anywho, if you anyway, but the point is like writers, I don't know where writers for these love dramas do this, where they create unnecessary drama, and it feels almost as a way to punish the characters, and I don't know why, and especially why would you do this at the right at the end of the show, and like you don't know if you're getting a second season, why would you end on such a massive cliffhanger if you're not gonna get a second season? That's something that should have been dealt with from the beginning, or not even at all, because it was completely unnecessary. And I think it spoiled the show for me. Like I was speaking with some other friends, we had two other friends, Joy and Josie, who watched quite a bit of dramas together, and we were talking about this, and we all three agreed it was unnecessary, and it was a I think a disservice to the story, and I think it was a disservice to the genre too. It was just like if we can have if we're gonna have drama, there are dramas, there are gonna be drama, but please, not unnecessary dramas, and not like this stereotypical way of writing characters where you have them lying for absolutely no reason. And don't do it at the end of the season. Don't do it in the last 10 minutes of the show when it's where you undo everything that happened previously. And yeah, please don't. And so the third show that I'm gonna discuss, and this is one that I didn't m mention previously because as I said at the beginning of this episode, that it was when I started after I recorded the second recap. So this one is Taxi Driver, and this I really enjoy this one. And it's I think this is I think a lot of the dramas that I've been watching have had a revenge plot. And this one has a massive revenge plot. It is the main point of the entire show, and this one is Taxi Driver starring Lee Jae-hoon, hey boo, and Isom. And so Lee Jae-hoon plays Kim Dookie and Isom plays Kang Hana. And Dookie is he is this ex military. I should say he's not just military, I should say. He's an ex naval officer, and his mother was killed, and he joined what is called the Rainbow Taxi crew. And what they do is they carry out revenge plots on behalf of people who aren't able to do it for themselves. So, and it's not just revenge where like someone wants a hit put on someone. No, that's not it. It's about people who have lo had loved ones been murdered, or they've been assaulted, or they've been mistreated by employers, or they've been as bullied. And they and the people around them, whether it's the police, the judicial system, teachers, doctors, even family members, are not helping them, or doing what the victims think isn't enough. Like Dookie and members of the taxi of Rainbow Taxi, they will handle things for you, and they will get retribution. And the interesting thing with this show is that all of the cases, if, as far as I know, are based on real life cases and situations that happened in South Korea. And this show was written, the first, I should say, episodes 1 to 10 was written by Oh Sang-ho. And then when you watch from episode 11 to 16, you'll notice there's a tonal shift. And a little bit in the plot too, with and this happened because they brought on a second writer, Lee Jae-yeon, and apparently there was some tension between Oh Sang-ho and the director Park Jun-woo, and it shows in the show. And I'll get into that a little bit. So this show is based on a web comic written by Carlos and Lee Jae-jin, and as I said, it's also based on real cases. So when you look at the situation that happened in the show, you're like, these things actually happened. And like we know the world is a terrible place, but then when you think about the things that people go through, and these are things that don't make it into the news, like truly awful situations, you and then you realize, oh, not only did these things happen, but the law, the judicial system that people depend on to get justice fails the victims over and over and over. You're just like, wow, the world can be a shitty place, excuse my language sometimes. And as someone who studied law, who like I have my diploma in practical studies, like we did criminal cases, we did civil cases as part of our course studies and stuff. And like that sometimes when I was studying, used to think the law seems to protect the criminals more than the victims. And that's kind of a situation that happens here. Because there's a situation with this kid. This man went to prison for 20 years for something that he didn't do. He was co his a confession was coerced and literally beaten out of him, and he went to prison based on this coerced confession. And it's just like, how can anyone buy this confession where it doesn't make what he's saying doesn't make sense? But he was denying it, all of these things that like you can tell he's beaten. How are you not connecting the bruises to the confession, right? He went to prison for 20 years. And then when they found out the real killer, the prosecutors are gonna tell him, oh, we can't prosecute him for this other murder because the statute of limitations has run out. And the man is like, how is it that your statute of limitations matters more than my life, matters more than the hurt caused to me and the family that I lost because his wife and his daughter left him? And he's like, what kind of justice is that? Right, and he contacted Dookie and the Rainbow Taxi's crew, and they were like, "We're gonna get justice for you." And the way how they had to get that done was to hit the other perpetrator where it hurt. And so, like the real killer, who was also in prison for other murders, they were like, "We're gonna take this person. We gotta sh like he's like a psychopath." But they were like, "We found your weak spot," because they're like, the government and the judicial system isn't gonna do anything. The prosecutors aren't gonna prosecute him for the murder and for wrongful imprisonment of this man. And yeah, so like there are cases like that. And then there's a case where this lady, she was intellectually disabled, and she had like a child level intellect, and she and a whole and a but and she and a whole bunch of other people like with other intellectual disabilities were being abused by these people that were running this factory. And they were seeking out help, and this woman who's supposed to be helping them, who's supposed to be a social worker, was exploiting them. And like they weren't getting help from anyone. No one is checking up on these people, and they were being beaten and abused and starved and tortured. And like and she was like, "I have no one to turn to, so I'm going to turn to Rainbow Taxi." And then there's like situations where the prosecutor's like, "Oh, you're circumventing the law. You're going above and beyond the law." They're like, "What law are you talking about? The law isn't protecting the victims. Someone has to show these people that they matter and that they care." And it might the show itself might not be to everyone's to everyone's taste, but I think it's also important, like sometimes like we do need to acknowledge that the law does not work the way it should. And like when you look at South Korean law, you see like people are punished extremely harshly for having like possession of like weed, like marijuana, like small amounts, and they'll go to prison for like 3, 4 years, five even. And then men who rape and assault and victimize women and children, they basically get off with a slap on the wrist. Politicians, corrupt politicians, don't get punished. It happens all over the world, not only in just in South Korea. It happens in America, in North America, it happens here in Canada. And is you're just like thinking, why should I care about a law that doesn't care about me? And there's this philosopher, like you study him a lot. It's like there's John Locke. And is it Locke? Who says a corrupt law is no law is a bit, I'm gonna paraphrase because I can't remember the exact quote, but a corrupt law is no law, is no law to be followed, right? And it's just like, why should you expect the people to follow a law that doesn't protect them and doesn't serve them the way it should? Because the law is about maintaining order, but if the order negatively impacts the majority, the people without the most power, why should they be able to follow it, right? So it's kind of a lot of these situations in the show, and it's about 16 episodes, and I think it was done really well, with a caveat in the fact that they said like there was a shift in the directors and in the writers, sorry, and you notice it. I didn't know until I actually went to looked up because I saw there was a shift in the storyline, like certain things start to happen, and I'm like, okay, we know that Dookie and the team aren't exactly following the law, but what they're saying is right. And so what had happened was is major spoilers, they were keeping the people that they were punishing prisoners. So like Dookie didn't exactly know what was going on, but there is the professor. I keep calling him the professor, but he's not. This is Jang Sun Chul, who owns the taxi service and also the secret lair that they have. It's kind of like Batman. and he owns it and he runs it, and he played by Kim Ui Sung. He was working with this woman who was I guess you would call her like a gang. She's I wouldn't call her mafioso, mafiosa. It wouldn't be a mafioso, mafioso. She would be a mole, but she had her own gang, and he was working with her, and she was keeping these men in cages. So like he also didn't know. So like Sang Chung didn't know that what she was doing was taking the men and like using them for like organ trafficking. So he didn't know that. He thought she was just keeping them in the cages, and like he would go up periodically and visit and would be telling the people, are you truly sorry for what you've done? Have you truly regretted, and do you truly want to atone for your sins? And like they'd be like, not really. And but he didn't know she was doing organ trafficking. So what happened was that she got him out, she let them out, and this and it was like and then they it was this whole thing where they were like, oh, we're being mistreated, and they were basically on the moral high, they were trying to get on the moral high horse, saying that we are more in the right than you because like what we did to those people isn't as bad as what you did to us. Not true. But and I was like, are you really trying to rehabilitate these murders, or are you really trying to make the viewers side with rapists, murderers, bullies, extortionists, abusers? Is that what I'm seeing? Serial killers? I'm like, is that what I'm seeing happening here? So I was like, let me go and look up and see what's going on. And then lo and behold, yeah, there was a change in the writers. And I'm like, yeah, I can see it. Because what the original writer was trying to show is about how people, when the system fails people, people who feel they have no option, feel they have nowhere else to turn, will turn to someone who can help them. And it may not be legal by legal standards, by law, but they're doing what they think needs to be done, because they're like, there has to be some balance, some kind of justice. And that's the whole story. And because the main thing was about how the system fails people, like if the system operated the way it should, people, the victims wouldn't have to be, and the victims' families wouldn't have to be seeking retribution. That was the whole point. And then it's shifted. And I'm like, this makes no sense. And I guess they course corrected, and they probably were hearing what people were saying, because they, it kind of changes again in episode 14. I would say it changes back. They course corrected around episode 14, in episode 14. But yeah, those between episode 11 to the beginning of episode 14, even I would say 15, I was just like, yeah, no, you're losing me with this plot. You're losing the plot here with this one a bit. And so let me get into a little bit into this, into the stories, because there's another character, I think she was really important. And Go-eun, played by Pyo Yi-jin, and she, her story kind of like really connected with me, because her sister was a victim of cyberbullying, in the fact that she slept with this guy, and this guy turned around and sold her, there's a sex tape that he secretly recorded without her permission, without her knowledge, and put it on the internet on this website, and she committed suicide. And Ahn Go-eun, she was the younger sister, and she was completely devastated. She had a mental breakdown. And and I think this particular storyline was talking specifically about how the internet is used to victimize not only women, but people in these situations, whether they're male or children, how people of sexual violence, because this is to me sexual violence, are victimized not only by the people who hurt them and the people who record them, but also by the companies who house these videos and make money off of these videos, and then the people who pay to watch these illegally recorded videos and rape happening on screen. And then there's there's how the government, and then how like legislation and laws and rules are written, where there's too many loopholes for these people to get away with doing all of these wrong things, while the victims are left with their lives and shattered. And then it also kind of spoke to how women are denigrated and again once more victimized by society for them being exposed to having sex, where the men, nothing happens to the men. Like the guy who did it, like he does it repeatedly, he did it before. He's like, oh, like who you think they're gonna care more about, who you think they're gonna be insulting more, me or her, right? And it kind of, and like it's kind of subtle how the writer did that, which is the main writer, and like they were saying, this is things that happen, like you, there's like 10 different ways that one situation can victimize a person. And for Ahn Go-eun, it kind of showed how these things can affect not only families, but affect other women in the victim's lives too. And then so that she becomes a victim. And I appreciate it. It was difficult to watch, but I think it's important, because these are things that happen daily with, like, there are women and children who are being victimized, and they're being raped and abused on videos, and people are making money off of them, and the government doesn't really seem to be doing it, because again, politicians are usually involved in these kind of situations. But that one was a really important storyline. So I'll wrap up with this one. I'll wrap up on this one. But I think Taxi Driver, it can be a tough watch. I kind of called it the drama version of the film Silence, starring Ahn Kong-yu. So if you've seen that film is extremely difficult to watch. And this is kind of like the drama version of that, but with different stories. And it doesn't get as intense as Silence is an extremely difficult watching some portions of it. But this one can be difficult to watch. So I would say a trigger warning, like if things with like discussions about rape and suicide and abuse and bullying, like really bad bullying, like be careful. But I think it's also a necessary watch. I'll finish talking about the shows that I wrapped, because I've been going on a bit too long. And I'll just go briefly into the shows that I am still watching, which is Law School. That one is also on Netflix. I've been really enjoying that one. There have been some really good plot twists in this one. Up to episode 15, because we are one episode short, because there's only one episode released last week. So it's only up to episode 15, again, another Netflix show. And this one is a legal drama. And I had said there is a motif in the show, which is one is a elephant, which regards with like memory and things happening a really long time ago. But then I had said in my recap that another motif should have been a spider web. And I was right, because technically there is literally a literal spider web that is kind of revealed, you know, like when people have like usually a giant wall where they're trying to figure out how things are connected. That happened. That literally happened. I'm like, there's my spider web. So I kind of predicted that and I got it. And it's going really good. I'll go a little bit more in depth when the show wraps up, because I think the show's really really good. It's really well written, really well directed and acted. The cast is phenomenal. And we're getting so much plots and twists. And this one, I think it deals with political corruption as usual. But then it talks about intimate partner violence, where one of the Yi So one, she was abused and written and raped by her boyfriend. And they talk about intimate partner violence, you know, the discussion where there are people that believe just because you're in a relationship with someone that you can't be raped by that person. And they're like, yeah, no, it's still right, rape. And I think it's important that they have that discussion. And I wish more dramas would kind of deal with these kind of discussions about abuse and the different ways abuse happens and the different people that can be abusive, not just employers and employees, but and parents and children, but spousal abuse and like intimate partner violence where you're not married to the person, whether it could be either male or female relationships or like homosexual relationships. Like just because you're in a sexual relationship with someone doesn't mean that they can't rape you. As long as it's against your will, as long as it's coercion, they're recording you having sex against your will. That is assault. That is not, you didn't agree to any of that. It's assault. It's rape. And that's kind of something that is, it began, I would say, around episode 12. And there is going, and it's somehow interconnected in the plan. I think it's being really written really well. And so that one is a really good show. And then I start Dark Hole, which is into the Korean zombie genre. Not too sure. I'm trying to figure out how this will wrap up because, like, you know, it's the mist. It's turning people into these kind of types of zombies, and it has an entity within it, and this entity speaks to people. Like they hear like auditory hallucinations, and they hear this mist speaking to them. But then there's also like this tentacle monster that lives in it. It kind of reminded me of like Sweet Home. So I'm kind of like keeping more my opinion on that when once it wraps up, because I'm trying to figure out where they're going with it. But I'm liking it so far. Yeah, it's an okay watch. Right now it's an okay watch. And then there's Love is Science. This one is another Taiwanese Nuna romance. It's going really good. We're finally having the main couple. They're finally admitting that they like to each other. They like each other, and it looks like the female lead, forgive me for not remembering her, Yanfei. Right, so it looks like she's gonna be taking initiative in their relationship, in the fact like she might be the one to actually start it. So we'll see. I'll get more into that next because I want to see what happens in this episode. And I'm recording this on Friday, so I'm gonna watch it tonight. And then when I record next week, I'll give some more info because I'm really liking how this show is exploring what the reservations, that's what I'm looking for, reservations an older woman might have dating not only a younger man, but a younger man that she knew personally when they were younger, and that she has, you know, changing her perception of him from this young kid that she knew into like this grown man who is like, I think he's pretty damn sassy the way he takes charge, and he still respects her. And he's like, when he washes her hair, that is sexy. Washing hair can be sexy, and I like how the directors do it. And I like how the writer, the actors perform those scenes. They're really well done. And then another drama that I'm watching, another one that I'm watching, is a Chinese. I believe it's a Chinese. I'm watching on WeTV, Mr. Honesty. This one is pretty good. I like the male lead, and this one also does have a Nuna romance where like the lead actress's best friend, she is liking this guy who's younger. So like she's dealing with that situation where she's like, it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, like I don't want to date someone who's younger. But then she's trying to figure out what it is about him being younger that she can't really wrap her head around. So they're exploring that. But then the female lead, she keeps lying. So the name of the show is Mr. Honesty. So like the guy, because of something that happened in his past, he is against people lying. And this girl lies for no reason. She will lie for like this over the silliest things, and it upsets him. And like the friend was like, you're a sucky girlfriend. I'm like, she is, because she keeps lying, and she's lying about trivial shit that she has no right to be lying about. And it hurts the guy. You guys, like, you know why I'm against lying, you especially trivial lying. And she and I'm like, girl, just stop. Just stop, like, just stop. Which I guess is the main thing. Like, how do you have someone who values absolute honesty in a relationship with someone who lies at the drop of a hat? Which I think, again, it's an interesting premise, but then it's just like she lies over silly shit, and it gets on my nerves. And I'm like, ugh. But I like the male lead, so I want to keep watching it to see what happens. And then I've been watching Sell Your House. This one is a It's really good. This one is on Viki. Excuse me, let me drink some water out of my Afka mug. Where was I? Yes, Saw Your House. So this one's on Viki. Kind of horror, drama. And this one, the female lead, she is an exorcist. So she goes, but she runs a real estate agency, which I think is super cool. So she goes into these houses and she exorcises latent ghosts, ghosts who have hung around because they have a grudge. And that's the reason why, in the premise of this show, that ghosts hang around houses or locations is because they have a grudge against someone and it's holding them to this location or to people. And I'm really liking this one. I like they're talking almost a bit about generational trauma and how they're basically the grudges that hold on to people are when people have unresolved issues. So again, these are people who had like kind of a taxi driver. They didn't receive justice or for something that had happened to them. So they're kept there. They're being kept there again against their will. So I'm really liking how this one is going. And then like the male lead, he's a medium, and so they have a connection from when they were young, but he's a born medium and he's able to help her exorcise demons because he can let the demon go into his body without being possessed by the demon or by the spirit, I should say. Whereas with the exorcist, if she was to allow a spirit into her, she would become possessed and controlled by it. So there's this interesting dynamic where he's so vulnerable and she's vulnerable, and they I think they work really well together, but because you don't trust issues. And this one I'm really looking at so far. That one is Saw Your Haunted House. And then there is Mine, another Netflix drama. So many dramas. I'm not gonna go into this one because I think I've been recording for way too long and you guys are probably tired of hearing me talking. But this one is I'm gonna get a guest to discuss this one because I think this one talks about a lot of themes. It talks about wealth, about the wealth disparity, you know, the haves and the have-nots, the upstairs and downstairs, you know, the rich people and the maid and the, you know, the house staff. It's kind of like, yeah, there's so like haves and have-nots, and then there's upstairs downstairs, which was an old British show from like years ago. I think it was in the 80s. It's kind of a situation kind of like that. I wonder if the writer was influenced by that. But I've always wanted a show where it showed like the servant staff, or servant class working for, you know, when we watch these kind of like the Mak Jung dramas where they have like extremely wealthy family and like they have like the servants and the butlers and the maids, but we don't really know anything about these people. So this show is kind of like that. It shows both the super rich people and the people who are looking after their lives. And then there is a lesbian character. She's in the closet. We the audience know she's gay, but the people around her don't, except for one or two. I think Mother Emma knows, and also of course the woman that she was involved in a relationship with. And it's really good. I'm gonna go into that one a bit more because I have to get caught up. I didn't watch this week's episodes because I kind of fell behind and then I wasn't feeling well. And then I got sidetracked by some other stuff, but also I'll go into that in the next review. So those are the shows that I'm watching. So the last one I just mentioned is Mine. I've also been watching, there's one called The Imperial Coroner. That one's on Viki. That one's, it's like, you know, a period Chinese drama. She's a female coroner, which I think is interesting too. And she's working with a prince and like there's lies, deception, death. But it's a pretty easy watch. It's like I've already been paying attention, so that's why I can't really go into it. Like I'll turn it off to like have background noise when I'm doing work on a computer or some editing or whatever. But it looks like a fun watch so far, and I finally finished Ancient Detective. That one is, I have no idea what the happened because I wasn't paying attention. I watched the last episode. Like, wait, that was the last one? So again, no, I don't know. So like in the next one, also there'll be some shows premiering. Apparently season 3 of Penthouse was released. I'm gonna have to get caught up on that crazy show. And then so you can find my live tweets of Penthouse season 3, Mine, Dark Hole, and Law School using the hashtag Dramas with Carrie. And you can find more of, you can you'll be watching this on YouTube, of course, so you can find the other two recaps I did, as well as some other Beyond the Romance episodes I did with guests, like my friend Ray Liu. We talked about Tale of the Nine Tailed, and my friend Mackenzie Gooding. We spoke about the uncanny counter. Those were two really fun discussions, and we'll have more of those. And then you can go on the podcast on butwhythepodcast.com for Beyond the Romance. The first two podcast recordings I did with guests, with my friend Yatide Bidaki. We spoke about It's Okay to Not Be Okay. And then with Joy and Josie, my first episode was we spoke about coffee brands. You can find those on the butwhythepodcast.com site. And those are in audio. And you can find more of my writing on that site as well, as I'll be providing links in the description box below for my author page. You can find more of my writing, my reviews, my articles. And I think that's it. again, thank you so much to everyone who subscribed to my channel. I really appreciate it. I hope you've been enjoying these. Please leave comments. I will respond to them. And if you have recommendations for dramas you'd like me to watch, or if you'd even like to be a guest on the podcast and here on YouTube, please let me know. Again, thank you so much, everyone. Stay safe and have good drama watching. Bye.